My journey with the badge is a foundation and a platform that aims to humanize and preserve the firsthand stories of law enforcement officers, active and retired. Jason Cates is the founder of the My Journey with the Badge Foundation. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us more about My Journey with the Badge.
I retired from law enforcement in 2021, December of 2021. And shortly after I retired, one of the things that I immediately noticed was, for the most part, the day that you retire is the last day that you really hear from anybody that you used to work with. You're forgotten very quickly. Your spot is filled. If you had a position of rank, people move up and fill that rank, and you're not even a memory, quite honestly. And if you got somebody that reaches out to you, you're lucky. So it really leaves you with this empty feeling inside. You do something for 20, 30, some guys 40 years, and the day you walk away, you lose a part of your identity. And it took a couple of years for me to realize that I wasn't the only person going through that. And I saw an opportunity there to help others out and help them share their stories and kind of create a legacy and something they can show their grandkids to let them know what they did when they were on the job.
Talk more about the work of the foundation today.
What I do is I travel around the country and I interviewed retired law enforcement officers, only retired officers, because I really want them to feel free to talk, and I don't want them to inadvertently say something that backs them into some problems with their agency. So I'll travel the country. I sit down with retired guys. I've interviewed guys that started in 1966 and guys and girls that have retired as recently as 2025. So I'm capturing almost 60 years of law enforcement. I mean, we're talking about guys and girls carrying six-shot revolvers to, well, you see guys on the streets these days with these vests and all these extra magazines and everything else. While it's the same job, it's changed in so many ways. So I travel the country and I sit down with these retired officers, and it really serves three purposes. One, it captures a piece of history because it really is law enforcement history. Two, it helps these officers to leave a legacy for those that come after them. And three, really, it's educational. It really is. It's more than what's on the TV show. It's the good, the bad, the ugly. No filter. These guys and girls, they sit down and tell you the absolute truth. They don't have a dog in the fight anymore. They've left the job. And for many of them, it's really a cathartic experience.
How much do people hear what you hear once those retired law enforcement officers tell their story? Are there any aspects of the stories that they tell you shared in any way with the broader public once they share them with you?
Every interview is recorded and it's uploaded to YouTube. Right now I have 44 full episodes. They vary in length from 45 minutes to a little over 2 hours. I mean, if you think about it, it's really hard to boil 20, 30 years of service down to 1 hour. So everything is uploaded into YouTube. I'll be honest with you, I talk to far more people on the phone than I have the opportunity to actually sit down and interview. I've got a long list of people waiting, and it's just a matter of me being able to get out there and sit down with them. All my interviews are in person. I think it's important to make those connections. So I've got 44 full episodes on the YouTube channel. The YouTube channel is My Journey with the Badge. I couldn't even tell you how many shorts that are cuts from all of those interviews.
What are some of the stories that you hear?
A lot of the stories that I hear, there's funny and there's sad. I'm surprised at how many sad stories are shared. I ask very open-ended questions, and 90% of the time, those officers take me to really traumatic experiences in their careers. One officer from San Diego County, he dealt with a dead baby on Christmas Eve, a dead baby on Christmas Day, and then a small plane crash where a mother, father, and their daughter died on the day after Christmas, 3 days in a row. That was his week. Just incredibly traumatic. Another officer that gave CPR to a toddler that drowned in a pool, and he said, I could see the life leaving the baby right there in my arms. And he was recounting a story that had happened 20 years. It was 20 years since he had even thought about this, and he started crying right there, and he said, I can't believe I'm crying about this. This was 20 years ago. So there's a lot of trauma that I think is untreated. I'm talking to a lot of officers that started in the 80s, and it was a different world in the 80s when it comes to recognizing trauma. trauma, the experiences these officers would go through. They would go through them in 1 hour, go to the locker room, change their uniforms, and be right back out on the street. I can't tell you how many officers responded to suicides. One recounts a story, a very graphic story of responding to a suicide scene and having blood all over his uniform, going to the station, changing his uniform, and going right back out on the street. Just no mechanism for helping that officer cope with that. And then he goes home and goes to his wife and kids, and everything has to be normal.
What's a story you've heard that has touched you in a particular way?
Probably the most enlightening story came from a spouse of a police officer. So I wanted to kind of do something different, and I interviewed a couple of spouses. And in interviewing the spouse, she told me how her husband had been involved in a traumatic experience. Someone had lost their life, and he felt responsible for it. And he wasn't dealing with it well. And this had dragged on for several years. And it finally got to the point where his inability to get help and coping with that was impacting their marriage. And she told me, I've never told anybody this story, but I told him if he did not get help, I was packing up, taking the kids, and I was filing for divorce. And that was the first time she had ever told anybody that story. And what it really did for me personally was it shined a light on, we do a bad enough job in this profession of taking care of our employees, our officers. We don't even think about the impact the job has on their family, their wife, their kids. It's nothing we even look at. If you have an officer that's involved in a critical incident, whether it's a shooting or the death of a child or a particularly graphic suicide, they take that home with them. There's no way that doesn't impact their home life, and we give no consideration to that.
How long have you been doing this?
Podcast I've been doing for, it'll be 2 years in December.
How has it changed you?
I will tell you, it's really given me a greater appreciation for the job. It's given me a recognition that, boy, I wish someone would do a deep dive on law enforcement. Follow a law enforcement officer from the day he accepts the job to the day he retires, he or she, and see how the job truly changes them. I think the only way you can do that is if you, over the course of a 20, 30-year career, regularly check in with that officer. Officers do get, they get jaded over time. They go through peaks and valleys. They have good times in their careers and they have bad. I don't think what the public realizes is that there's a good percentage of officers out there that come to work every day feeling that they're being treated unfairly by their department and by the public, by their peers. And I couldn't imagine going to work in an environment like that. I don't know how you could do the job effectively. I mean, there's so much to learn about this job that I don't think that I ever looked at and really considered, because I was one of those guys, you're on a traumatic incident. I was a boss. Hey, suck it up. Let's get back out there. We got a job to do. And what I realized was my dedication to accomplishing the mission often occurred at the expense of the well-being of the officer. And if I could go back and do my career again, I'd pay more attention to that.
And for people who want to pay more attention to my journey with the badge, the podcast, all that you do, where can they go online?
So just go into YouTube, just do the search, My Journey with the Badge. It should pop up for you. Got a website, myjourneywiththebadge.com. That'll point you to the YouTube channel. I'm on all the social media platforms, but I'll be honest, turning 56 here shortly, I'm not the best with it. But I am very good about making sure I upload all of my content to YouTube.
All right. Jason, thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you, sir.
And now, here's part of an episode from the My Journey with the Badge podcast, featuring Jason Cates with Tim Fingland, now retired, who served as a police investigator in Rochester, New York.
I had literally had a voice screaming in my head, stay put, stay put, stay put. Undercover comes around the corner, and a guy comes around the corner right behind him, taking his T-shirt, putting it over his head, make a mask out of it. So I get on the radio, robbery, robbery. Next, the guy pulls out a gun, gun, gun. So now I bail out. He puts the gun to the back of the undercover's head. As I'm trying to get an angle running towards the undercover, the guy's got the gun right at the undercover, and I can see the muscles kind of flex in his forearm. Literally, a voice went off in my head, you got to get in this.
Tim, by way of an introduction, I wanted to provide a brief overview of your 25-year law enforcement career. Your law enforcement career began in March of 1988 with the Rochester, New York Police Department. Some of your assignments included patrol, the tactical unit, and the special investigations section, where you served as an investigator for 21 years. You are a police instructor and an ATIA certified technical investigator. Additionally, from January of 2002 to October of 2004, you worked part-time for the Department of Defense training special forces personnel on electronic and physical surveillance. You retired from the Rochester Police Department in May of 2013. Tim, thanks for agreeing to sit down and share your story with us.
You're welcome.
So why did you choose law enforcement and why the Rochester, New York Police Department?
So my dad was an electrical contractor and he owned his own business. I worked for him since I was like five. Almost on a full-time basis once I hit my teens, and I hated it. Every house you went into was the same. You nail up boxes, you drill holes, you pull wires. So, you know, now I'm getting around 16 years old. I got caught skipping school. My dad got mad at me. Says, well, you're not going to work for me if you don't have an education. I'll get you a shovel. You'll be a ditch digger. So now I started to panic. What am I going to do with my life? I don't want to be an electrician. And I'm not going to dig ditches. And like I said, about that time I'm driving. And I remember vividly, there was a really bad snowstorm. And I was always impressed with the New York State Troopers' uniforms, their Stetson hats. Thought they looked really sharp. And I'm driving down the highway, and there's a trooper out in a ditch, pushing a car out of the ditch in the middle of the snowstorm, and his uniform's getting trashed with snow and slush. And I got thinking, man, that's a noble job. He's out there helping push this poor lady out of the ditch. And then I got thinking about the job. You know, you're driving around, you're doing different things, you're seeing and doing things that most people don't get to do. So that really piqued my interest. On a side note, the nobility kind of goes away after a few years. After about 3-4 years on a job, it's more like, why is this freaking idiot driving so fast? I got to get out of my car now and get in that crap. But anyways, I interviewed a bunch of troopers, and it really interested me. And the reason I ended up on the Rochester Police Department, they were the first agency that hired me.
How many departments do you think you tested for?
Three total. I got a job offer with San Diego, California. And I almost accepted that. I haven't heard anything from Rochester at the time. A buddy of mine was going through the New York State Corrections Academy, and he called me and I said, look, Bill, did you hear from, because he and I went out there and took the test, did you hear from San Diego? He goes, no. I said, well, I got offered the job. I'm thinking about going out there. He says, don't. He says, you're getting hired. I said, well, how do you know that? He says, I can't tell you. Well, it turns out he was going through the academy with the girlfriend that was in charge of background recruitment.
So tell me a little bit about the Rochester Police Department. That might lead in to some more questions I have, but how big is it? And you know what? I've never, ever been up that way. So kind of describe it as if you're describing it to a tourist.
Yeah. So Rochester, the city itself, used to be pretty prosperous. It was the headquarters for Kodak that employed over 130,000 people. Xerox, Regu, Bausch & Lomb were all headquartered there. It was a really thriving city till, like everybody, every other city, a lot of those companies moved out of the country to save money and regulation. But anyways, the department is about 700 sworn members. The population of the city now is about 225,000 people.
So when you... a department that big, when you're applying for that agency, I mean, back in the 80s, early 90s, everybody was applying for cop jobs. What's that applicant pool look like? Any idea how big it is?
Well, here's the thing. Like I said, I always wanted to be a state trooper. At the time I took the state police test, there were 13,000 people that took it.
Wow.
I scored a 97 on the test, and it wasn't good enough to get on. I scored a 99 on the Rochester Police Test, and I actually didn't get hired for that academy class. They hired me for the next class 6 months early, and they put me at headquarters taking reports over the phone, which really gave me a leg up because every report that was written in the patrol section came through headquarters. And I read every single one of them every night. So I got a good idea how reports were written and investigative steps. So
that's awesome. So does Rochester have its own academy, or are you going to academy with a bunch of other cities?
No, they have a combined county academy. Any agency within the county that's putting somebody through the academy, we all went together. But Rochester's the largest. I think there were 40, 45 of us from Rochester with a handful of deputies, handful of town recruits.
Any memorable experiences from the academy?
No, but I'm former military, so it was really a piece of cake for me as far as the regimental part of it. And I screwed off a lot, and the first test scared the crap out of me. 75 is passed, and I got a 76. So I really studied hard after that. But it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of camaraderie. We went out a lot, probably too much, but it was a good experience. Oh, on a side note, yeah. I was working for my father doing electrical work, and we actually did electrical work at the academy during one of the classes. And I kind of found this is probably about the time I just started becoming interested in law enforcement. And I vividly remember standing in the utility room looking out while class was going on. And that first day of the academy was... it's funny. It was pretty neat.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Sit there, I'm looking at the utility class and thinking, you know, 4 years ago I was standing there doing a job I hated.
Yeah. Any first memories of being at the Rochester Police Department?
Oh, yeah. My very first day we wore grays in the academy. First day in FTO, got the nice blue uniform. First call out of roll call was suicide by shotgun.
Wow.
And I still remember the address, 88 Arbutus Street. Walked in and the guy, it looked like somebody cut him off right at his nose and set a pizza on his head. And, you know, the funny thing is, as tragic as that is, I'm standing there thinking, this is really cool. I'm first day in a job and I'm seeing, one of the reasons I got in a job was to see and do things that most people don't get to do. And I'm standing there thinking, well, this is it, day one. I'm seeing something, my FTO took me out for pizza that day. I think he was trying to rattle me. It didn't bother me.
So what's roll call like in an agency? You have a roll call?
Oh, yeah.
And what's that like at an agency that big?
It's like any other. Well, our agency, we have 8 different patrol sections at the time. It was decentralized. So your roll call, I think you'd have 10 people on a shift. So it wasn't a huge roll call. And it was like any other typical roll call.
So give me that 30,000-foot perspective of your career.
Well, I did. So FTO, got assigned the patrol section, like every new recruit does. Did 11 months in patrol. First few months, I just covered for guys who were on their days off. And then I got my own car beat, which I took a lot of pride in. I started in the 88, so it was still kind of pretty old school. Everything was about car beat integrity. You didn't let another car into your car beat unless it was a backup that you needed. If a call for service came in, you were on lunch, you broke from it and took that call because you didn't want anybody else in your car beat. I was proud that I got the worst car beat in the section, which, you know, I thought was, they showed a lot of confidence in me. And I learned a lot, made a lot of arrests, gained a lot of experiences in that 11 months, which got me into the tactical section. I was the youngest guy at the time to get in there that I'm aware of. I had less than 11 months on the road, got an attack unit. Did the attack unit for 2 years and experienced just about everything you can in there. And then went to Special Investigation Section, Narcotics Unit, where I was assigned to the Technical Surveillance Unit. I did all the electronic surveillance. Spent 21 years there. a part of just about every investigation you can imagine, from homicides to $11 million armored car robberies to political cases, you name it.
Carbide integrity, I want to follow up on that. So does that mentality, to your knowledge, do you think that still exists today?
No. And so we had a mayor that was our chief at one point. Actually, while he was chief, he decentralized the 8 patrol divisions and made it an east side, west side, greatly increased the size of the patrol sections. So there's no way a guy could keep up with calls in a patrol section that's 5 times the size as it used to be. And you lose a lot with that. When I worked patrol, I knew every bad guy in my patrol beat. I knew all the decent people. They all knew me. You just don't have that anymore. It's my understanding they're leaning back towards decentralization now.
For the rest of this conversation, visit myjourneywiththebadge.com. Catch all our conversations on Scenic Routes at our website, wutc.org, on the WUTC app, and wherever you get your podcasts.